So good afternoon, everybody. This is Kelsey Walter, the Project Director for NCIAD at Nashwood. Welcome to our third All-State webinar focused on the National Core Indicators Aging and Disabilities Project. Obviously, we'll be recording this call, and a copy of both the recording and then the PowerPoint that you'll see here today will be, you can find that on our website under initiatives. There's a National Core Indicators page. So today we will be discussing the importance of working with your state's Medicaid office when you're planning for and implementing the NCIAD survey. So first we'll hear from Kim Tanaka, from the Ohio Department of Medicaid, and Hope Roberts from the Ohio Department of Aging, who are going to talk to us about their experiences working together on the NCIAD pilot survey just this last year. And then next we'll hear from Camille Dobson. She's the Deputy Executive Director here at Nashwood. She'll be discussing how to claim the Medicaid administrative match for NCIAD activities related to the Medicaid population your state includes in its sample, and the importance of communicating with your Medicaid office about this opportunity. And then finally, we'll hear from Julie Bershatsky. She's the project director for NCIAD at Human Services Research Institute, and she's going to be walking us through a great new tool that HSRI created along with NASDES for the NCI IDD survey. The tool is basically a crosswalk between the new HCBS requirements and revised assurances and the NCI IDD data that's available to participating states. As we finalize the NCIAD survey, there's going to be a similar crosswalk tool available to states, so that'll be available sometime next year, probably. It'll definitely be available before the final survey is ready in June. So without any further ado, I'll turn it over to Kim and Hope. And Kim and Hope, go ahead and just tell me next slide when you're ready for me to proceed.
Great. This is Hope Roberts from the Department of Aging, and my colleague, Kim Donica, who is the state's project director for both our balance incentive program and our Money Follows the Person grant. Kim, is that a good characteristic of all the work that some of the work you're responsible for?
Yes, that's great. Thanks.
You want to add anything?
No, that's okay.
I think it's important to know the scope of responsibility that Kim has at the Department of Medicaid, because as we go forward, you'll see how much this project, the NCIAD project, supports the broader statewide initiatives at the state Medicaid office. Next slide, please. When the Department of Aging became aware of the opportunity to participate as a pilot state in the development of the tool, it was completely aligned with our interest in establishing, as part of our long-term services and support infrastructure, a quality strategy that captured the voice of the consumers using the services. Kim, is there anything you'd like to add to our outcome statement?
No, I think I would just echo the sentiment from Hope. You know, we have always done field work around quality, where we actually send reviewers in to talk with individuals that we serve and get information from them around the quality of their survey or the quality of their services. I think the thing that really attracted us to the NCIAD was that it was much broader than just the services and really was focused on the person and the whole person and those quality of life indicators. You know, we have a very active MFP program in Ohio, and our quality of life survey that we do for our MFP participants is a pretty broad stroke. And I think we were interested in having an opportunity to have kind of that broad look for non-MFP participants also.
The other appeal to us as a state was the opportunity to have a similar approach across systems. So the NCI tool has been established in our DD system for, I think, about the last six years. So next slide. This is just a real simple update on the status of our project. You can see that our sample size was across our NIF-based waivers and included our Older Americans Act service programs, and the sample size was about 12 600 people. Our vendor was Vital Research, and they were very, very competently and professionally completed those interviews in about 6 weeks. We had 675 attempts made to schedule out of our sample of 1,200. We had a refusal rate of about 38%, both passive and active refusals. We had a 38% inability to schedule due to bad phone numbers, and just a 15% inability to, or 5% inability to schedule due to language barriers. One of the things that we didn't do in this sample was exclude people that weren't English speaking as their first language. So it was good to see that we didn't have too much of a barrier as a result of that decision. One of the questions, how did we approach our discussion with our Medicaid office? In Ohio, the structure of the Health and Human Service agencies is we're under one umbrella agency, and so we're very involved in both the long-term and short-term planning for the operation of the Medicaid programs across sister agencies, as well as with day-to-day operations. So it was, and it was being aware of what the goals were and what the vision for the Medicaid program in Ohio was, and how the different projects that we've already alluded to, in addition to all the other things, are very interrelated. And so not having a siloed approach to our day-to-day work made this initial discussion a lot easier. Kim, do you have anything you can add?
Yeah, Hope, this is Kim. So I would agree. I think that, you know, even really before our kind of oversight by the Office of Health Transformation, which is the umbrella organization, the Department of Medicaid had really strong partners and relationships with its sister state agencies in regard to the administration of Medicaid programs, you know, across the delivery system. I think that we really saw the opportunity in the NCIAD, and we're going to talk about it a little bit in the next slide, to leverage this opportunity for a variety of purposes. And I think that from our perspective, we see it as really a win-win-win across the board. It certainly is helpful to have the support of the umbrella organization, the Office of Health Transformation, as we do this work, because it really just helps make sure that we have kind of a unified vision for how we're moving forward with the delivery system. We have a lot of systems reform happening currently, and it's a very exciting time. But I think one of the really exciting parts about it is that this isn't just a Department of Medicaid project. It's not a Department of Aging project. That these projects and this project with NCIAD is really an Ohio project.
So part of the approach was it's not a short-term project. It's not a it's a project that serves multiple interests and can be sustained and embedded in our infrastructure. Kim and I both use the term opportunity fatigue, and I think that as our discussions together unfolded, that was one of the first words that came up. Wouldn't you agree, Kim?
Yes.
Can we take on one more project? Can we take it? And how is it not duplicative? And do we have the resources and the energy and the stakeholder support for doing yet one more thing at this time? And the benefit, from my perspective, what tipped the scale was this wasn't, it was part of our system reform. It wasn't just one more thing to do for right now. So that was important.
You know, just to echo that a little bit, I agree with you. You know, it is our intent to have the use of the NCIAD be, you know, part of the work that we do, you know, now and in the future, that it isn't just something that we're doing for this or for that, you know, for right now. And so being able to integrate it into the other activities that we're doing within the department, and seeing its value for a variety of purposes just helps strengthen that.
I started to make some references to our sample, so we'll talk a little bit more about that, who is involved. The Department of Aging is an operating agency for three waivers at the time this project was launched. The Department of Medicaid is not only the administrative authority for the waivers, but also operates two waivers for physically disabled from birth to 59. And so both sister agencies have different systems for where the data is stored and where it needed to be retrieved from. And some of the challenges that were presented with this is that we needed to make sure that we were pulling the same data. Just when you're working in two different systems, mapping the fields and making sure that do we collect the same thing and what do we call it if we do collect the same thing. And so that was probably one of the challenges, and then making sure that we had the resources to pull the data at the same time so that one of the agencies didn't pull it 3 months or 6 months before. Just those kind of practical logistic considerations were the things that we were addressing as the sample was being developed. And then because we also included our Older Americans Act programs, that was a third source for data that we had to go through the same process of making sure it was mapped and it was apples to apples. Issues that we ran into working across offices would be no surprise, would be just staff resources and prioritizing this project with everything else. But it really, we learned some good things about our system that I'm hoping that we are going to be able to use to inform another project that Kim's leading, which is the development of a single system for assessment and case management for all of our NIF-based waivers. So we learned what kind of information we were missing. We learned what we wanted to add in order to have a more refined sample across systems. We learned what we were currently storing that we could use for a different purpose. So those were some examples of some of the experiences that we had with building the sample. Would really urge states to start early with vendor procurement and start early with the dialogue on the sample and where it's coming from and who's responsible. Another factor to consider, because we were in two different agencies, was the issue of confidentiality and the ability, do we have the appropriate data sharing agreements to provide not only this information to another sister agency, but yet to a vendor to act on our behalf. Kim, is there anything you can add to build out the topic of building the sample?
I hope, I apologize, I'm multitasking. I think you have appropriately characterized it. I mean, there were challenges, I'll be honest with you, and some of them were data challenges, some of them were, sampling challenges, and you hit the nail on the head. You know, in a period of time where we have multiple priorities, and making this project a priority so that we could move the work forward was a challenge, and is a challenge, and probably is a challenge for all states.
One of the resources that we found to be really helpful with our sampling was not only HSRI being willing to stay in the conversation with us, and Julie, you may comment on this later, sometimes it felt like we were having the same conversation over and over again until the light bulb came on for all of us. But that level of support from HSRI helped us keep this moving forward, as well as having a vendor that was experienced with projects of this nature. So how we envision using the data moving forward. Kim, can you speak to that?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that really excited us about this project was the opportunity to be able to use this information moving forward. And, you know, Hope really talked about this in terms of this strategy really aligning with our policy work and our resource allocation and decision-making moving forward. I think the opportunity to have data of this nature across the delivery system, you know, our DD system uses the NCI, and so we're really excited about the opportunity to be able to use that data, what that data is going to tell us, how that data is going to inform our decisions in the future. Additionally, you know, we're a BIP state. And so, you know, we, BIP, you know, sets forth a requirement that, you know, states have outcome measures. And, you know, so we saw this opportunity as aligning really well with our BIP requirements and our BIP expectations. Additionally, we really think this information will be helpful as we are, you know, continuing to modify our measurements and our requirements around our C waivers. We think it's a terrific way to get individual feedback and help inform our OMSED planning, and also around helping demonstrate our compliance with the new HCBS regulations. So I think from a Medicaid perspective, participating in this and using the NCIAD is a real win-win-win-win because it helps us and informs us on a variety of fronts and for a variety of projects. And I apologize, I'm actually going to have to go. But, you know, Hope and I share a brain. So I don't know if you agree with that, Hope. But
yeah, actually I do. It's kind of scary some days, but
yeah, it is. So I'm sure that if you have questions for me, Hope can answer them. But you know, also folks, feel free to reach out to me directly. I wish you all luck. Thanks for having me.
Kelsey, thanks for forwarding this slide. We were one behind. So as we're moving forward with this, our plan is to extend our contract with our current vendor for another 12 months so that we've tested the survey tool with the vendor, and we want to have the opportunity then to conduct the first survey with the same partner. Kelsey, is there anything that we've missed that you'd like for us to add to the conversation?
Yeah, I think if you can talk a little bit about how you're planning to use the data, if you have any other things to add, that's fine. I know we talked about the BIP. You mentioned your OMSED planning as well.
Mm-hmm. We see this as a strategy that the state can use to demonstrate or to measure the effectiveness of community integration and consumer input on how the long-term service system is really providing the quality of life that as it's defined by the people that are using the services. One thing we didn't do, and I think this may be a good segue into the next portion, is we did not pursue the Medicaid administrative claiming option during this pilot, but it is the conversation that we'll be pursuing as we tee up to conduct the first survey in 2015. So, with that, I don't know that we have anything else to add, but looking forward to learning more about the Medicaid claiming component of the project from the next presenter.
Great. Thank you so much, Hope, and, of course, thank you to Kim, though she's not here to hear it. So next I'll pass it off to Camille Dobson. She's the Deputy Executive Director here at Nashwood, and she'll talk about this claiming issue.
Thanks for having me, Kelsey. Again, my name is Camille Dobson. I arrived about 6 weeks ago directly from CMS, so this is an area that I'm pretty familiar with. From the federal side, understanding the rules and the requirements, again, I would caveat my presentation to say each state's slightly different, and the processes and the approaches that you need to take are really unique to the way your Medicaid agency has outlined its funding plans with the federal government. But I think what I have in the slides will be general enough and applicable enough to everyone, so it should be helpful. This is pretty basic, so if folks on the phone already know this, please forgive me and ignore that, you know, take it as additional information, and happy to provide more consultation and technical assistance on this as you need. So the basics, for the Medicaid program, and the states have the ability to get two types of funding from the federal government. They get what's called the FMAP, the Federal Medical Assistance Percentage, for actual service delivery, the cost of delivering services to Medicaid beneficiaries. And there's also what's called what is titled Administrative Match, which provides 50 cents on the dollar to states for the administrative costs they incur for the Medicaid program. The key to that, frankly, is that the costs need to be documented as applicable to the Medicaid program. Federal funds aren't available for any state activities that aren't directly related to the Medicaid program. So there is the rub for state Medicaid agencies to build an administrative cost plan that identifies for their sister state agencies, their operating agencies, where services are relevant for the Medicaid program. So the federal rule is that administrative expenditures need to be considered proper and efficient for the operation of Medicaid. And that's a pretty broad definition. CMS has not put out a lot of very detailed guidance about that. I would direct you, if you're interested in that, to Medicaid.gov. On the financing page, there's a set of information about administrative claiming that's available for your information, but it is a pretty esoteric area. Three people at CMS manage the entire country, so it's a pretty small unit. So we could say, I think, based on what you heard from Kim and Hope, that administering surveys, beneficiary surveys, to assess the quality of life and quality of outcomes is, in fact, proper and efficient for the operation of the Medicaid state plan. The NCI states that have been doing NCI for their individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities have probably long been identifying these costs and sending them through their Medicaid agency for reimbursement. So we don't see anything different for the NCIAD survey as well. The hitch is that the Medicaid agency is the one that has to make the claim. So again, building on Kim and Hope's presentation, coordination and collaboration with your Medicaid agency is really critical. To the extent that you have that already, that's extremely helpful because the things that need to be in place are an interagency agreement between the Medicaid agency and your agency if you're not, for example, in the same administrative structure. Again, generalizing broadly, Medicaid agencies tend to be separate from the aging, disabilities, and mental health agencies in most states. Hopefully, in many cases, if your operating agency is already providing services in some for usually what typically are C waivers, 1915 C waivers, you probably already have an operating agreement and a memorandum or interagency agreement with the state Medicaid agency because they're transferring funds to you to operate the waiver on their behalf. So my hope is number one on this list, on this slide, on page 9 is already in place for many of you. However, it probably ought to be modified to reflect the NCIAD activities. So right now it probably includes a list of things that you do on behalf of the Medicaid agency for their waivers, and it would need to be modified to reflect the survey activities. It's probably not something that's currently envisioned, although depending on how smart the lawyers are in your state, they might have written it very broadly. The Medicaid agency, on the other hand, probably needs to modify what's called their cost allocation plan or their CAP, that reference in the Code of Federal Register is the requirement for states to have an approved cost allocation plan. And all this does is essentially say for expenditures that might not be completely 100% for a Medicaid beneficiary, the costs need to be allocated. It's pretty straightforward. So your administrative staff may serve a Medicaid beneficiary, may also serve a traditional, an OAA-funded beneficiary. The state has to come up with a way to allocate the costs of your staff between those two individuals so as to not allocate 100% of costs to Medicaid where there's federal funds available. So your Medicaid agency, I'm sure, is pretty familiar with that. And then the third piece is, obviously I've addressed, is a methodology to assign the costs of the survey. So the cost allocation plan that currently exists for the administrative costs that you incur for your waiver, for the waiver recipients, would need to be modified to reflect the survey costs. That's typically done by time studies, assessing, so for example, if you're going to have state staff administer the survey on your behalf, then you would need to figure out how much of that individual's time is spent on the survey and include that for purposes of claiming administrative match. If, like Ohio, you've hired an external party, then that's pretty straightforward. It's the full cost of the contract that could be allocated to the extent that it is covers the cost can be allocated for the contract to the percent based on the percentage of Medicaid beneficiaries you're serving versus non-Medicaid beneficiaries. So it sounds a little complicated, but your Medicaid agencies are very adept at doing this. They've had to do this from the beginning of the Medicaid program. And so close collaboration, I think, and discussing how this can work is critical. So the other piece that is much less well known than the administrative claiming match is the ability to actually get more of the funding for NCIAD surveys in states that use managed care. Because survey administration is one of the services that a state can have its independent entity for quality assurance do for them, the NCIAD survey can fit nicely into that bucket. So we have a pilot state who used their external quality review organization, which is the federal term for that independent entity that assesses the quality of the managed care program in the state, to administer the NCIAD survey on their behalf. Because they used that federal entity, any activities that entity does is eligible for 75% match, which is very advantageous to the state. So that's another alternative. Not every state, even if your state doesn't have managed care for individuals that are in your C waivers, but has managed care, say, for example, for parents and children or for adults with disability that don't have long-term care needs, the external quality review organization can be contracted to do the survey on your behalf. It doesn't have to be a managed care program just for your C waivers. So I want to make that clear. The state that actually used their ECRO, Georgia, does not have managed care for anyone other than their children and parents and pregnant women, and they were able to modify that contract to take advantage of that additional federal funding. So I think the takeaways are, is obviously, as Kim and Hope talked about, the first step is to discuss doing the survey with your Medicaid agency, helping the Medicaid agency to understand the value in doing the survey, for their Medicaid beneficiaries. I think, again, Kim and Hope made a great argument as to it was pretty much a no-brainer for them, given what they wanted, where they wanted to take their Medicaid program in Ohio. And then sit down and have the second conversation after everyone's on board about doing it. The next conversation is, okay, how are we going to pay for it? Using these ideas to talk to your Medicaid agency about ways to get federal funds to help pay for the effort.
Great. Thank you, Camille. So, and we'll have time at the end of the call for questions for all of our speakers today. So next, then, we'll hear from Julie Bershetsky. Again, she's the project director for NCID at HSRI, Human Services Research Institute, and she's going to be talking about a great tool that's available on the NCI side that crosswalks the survey to the new HCBS requirements and the revised assurances. So, Julie, go ahead.
Thanks, Kelsey. So as I'm sure everybody knows, some painfully, some gleefully, CMS issued new HCBS quality requirements specifically for HCBS settings and person-centered service planning. CMS also revised the HCBS quality assurance and sub-assurances. This all became effective in March this year. States have a few months to put together transition plans that really are supposed to show how states are planning to address the new quality requirements. To that effect, and to assist states to do this, HSRI, Human Services Research Institute, and the HSRI staff put together sort of a crosswalk, a guide specifically to help states figure out how the National Core Indicators Project, and this is the original National Core Indicators for IDD, how the NCI can be used as evidence for the new HCBS requirements. I have some familiarity with this guide, but really, and I'm going to go over a little bit the structure and what's how it's put together, but it is available on our website, and there will be a link to it at the end of the presentation. This is a screenshot of the sort of the front page of the guide. Next slide, please. It's roughly organized into three sections. The first section goes through each of the new HCBS requirement and crosswalks it to specific NCI data elements and specific surveys. The second section consists of sort of quick summary tables crosswalking which HCBS requirements can be met or can be, met by the existing NCI data and which cannot. And the third section goes into the specific revised HCBS assurances. So these are much more detailed requirements for the waivers. Again, crosswalks with those revised assurances and sub-assurances with existing NCI data. Next slide, please. So the new HCBS requirements roughly fall into four categories. There is the new HCBS setting requirements that are for both residential and day services. There is the new HCBS setting requirements for provider-owned and operated residential settings specifically. There are the new HCBS person-centered service plan process requirements and the new HCBS person-centered service plan documentation requirements. Now, the one that's getting the most play and the requirement that is most talked about is the setting requirements. I'm going to give some examples of specific requirements that fall under that residential and day services headline, and specifically give examples of which of the MCR items and how it can be used to meet those requirements. Next slide, please. So one of the new requirements for the HCBS community setting is that it is integrated and supports access to the greater community. That is the actual language in the new requirement. So some of the data, some of the data that National Core Indicator collects in the Adult Consumer Survey, which is the parallel survey to what is being developed for NCIAD, and some of the data elements in that survey that can be used directly to reference this requirement is where the person lives, if the person has regular interaction with neighbors, how often and whether people do specific activities in the community like shopping errands, entertainment, etc. If people can and are supported to see friends and family when they want to, if people have a way and transportation to get places when and wherever they want to, whether a person has relationships with other people as in staff or family, if people have a job in the community and there are multiple others, these are specific indicators and specific questions in the survey that could be used as evidence that this requirement is met. Another example is the next slide. Another example of what constitutes a community-based setting is that it ensures it ensures dignity and respect and freedom from coercion and restraint. And again, there are specific items in the MCI survey and the Adult Consumer Survey that can be used as evidence for this requirement, such as whether people are treated with respect by their staff and providers, whether people have enough privacy, whether they can be alone with guests, whether there are restrictions on the use of phone or internet, whether people knock on their door or their bedroom door before entering, whether people are safe or feel safe at home and at work and in the neighborhood. And if they are not safe, whether they have somebody to go to when they need to, when they want to feel safe and they need to talk to somebody. Another example, next slide, please. This is sort of an important one. There's a specific requirement that the entrances are to be lockable by the individual, him or herself, with staff having keys as needed. So here's an example where NCI data are useful in part, not fully, but only in part, because it does not actually ask questions about whether the entrances are lockable and who is in control of the keys. However, there are questions about whether people knock on the doors. I think this example was used a little bit earlier. Whether people knock on the doors before entering either the home or the bedroom, and whether the person, him or herself, feels that they have enough privacy. Another example, and this one specifically would fall under the person-centered service plan process requirement. One of the requirements there is that the service planning process is driven by the individual. And again, this is an example where NCI data are useful in part for demonstrating compliance. There are specific questions in the NCI on whether people have helped develop their service plan, if they're a case manager or support coordinator or whatever the title may be, whether their case manager asked people receiving services what it is that they wanted and helps them get the things that they wanted and they needed. in the family surveys for NCI, there are also questions about whether the family member or the or another family member. So either the person receiving services or family or other family members helped help develop the plan and whether the plan includes everything that they wanted. This slide is just an example of section 2 of the guide, and that's the quick view reference table. So on the left are is the list of the requirements, and on the right is basically an X if NCI helps demonstrate compliance for that requirement. If there is no X, then basically NCI does not address that particular requirement. Next, please. And this is, again, just an example of the third section of the guide, and that is that's the section that goes into specific revised assurances and sub-assurances. And on the left, in the left column is going to be a list of the specific assurances and sub-assurances. In the right column is going to be a list of specific NCI indicators and also the surveys, if it's the adult consumer survey or the family surveys or some other survey that where those indicators can be found and where they're measured. I think the next slide gives an actual hyperlink to, the actual hyperlink to the crosswalk. It's obviously available on our website and it's free. It's very well put together. There are several states who have started putting together their transition plans that have used this information and have used specifically put NCI data into their transition plan. So one of the better examples is the state of Indiana, who basically wrote NCI, looking at NCI data, into several phases, in fact, of their transition plan. If you want more information or if you want to look at Indiana's transition plan, for example, feel free to email us and we'll be happy to pass it along. The guide, as I said, is on the website. The examples that I gave in terms of the specific items in NCI and the requirements that they address, those items are going to be very similar for NCI AD. And others, of course. So as you know, we are just finished piloting the first draft of the survey, and we'll be spending the next few months revising it. And as soon as we revise it and sort of test it, one of our first priorities will be to develop this type of crosswalk specifically for NCI AD. So but crosswalking the indicators and the questions in the survey to the specific HCBS requirements and assurances and sub-assurances. So we're hoping to have, that done by, hopefully by January of 2015, hope maybe even sooner, but I'm not going to vouch for that. So that's it. We're it's a very useful tool. Obviously, CMS is looking at it quite favorably and is accepting NCI and will be accepting NCI AD as evidence for the new RECs. And they're being fairly supportive of this. So I think that's all I have. Kelsey?
Great. Thank you, Julie. And so what I do want to point out, so is that, as Julie said, that's something, a document that we're hoping to provide in the future before we send states out to do this survey in June of next year. But in the meantime, it would be good to look at that document. A lot of the questions that we have in our current survey, in the pilot survey, are similar, and Julie was trying to point out what was similar in the NCI survey and what we have in the NCI AD survey. I'll also add at the end of the slides when we post them a link to the transition plan that Indiana has. It's very helpful, and we're happy to talk with you about that more if you're curious about it. So with that, I'm going to stop the recording and then open up the phone lines to see if people have any questions. So hang with me for a moment.